Thank you so much for joining. This is Prashant Kumar. I am a multifamily syndicator, and I will talk a little bit about myself, and then I will introduce the guest, my great friend Eloy Ritana. But just a little bit about myself, nothing. I'm not going to bore you guys. Probably a little bit about me anyway. Strong technology background for last 25 years. I'm a multifamily syndicator. I just do this for fun, to meet new people, networking. I'm involved in multifamily. My expertise are I'm a numbers guy. I have about 1,200 units in my under my syndication, and I do explore. I mean, I've been doing assisted living for last 1.5 years also. And that's the reason I was in Phoenix a couple of weeks back to look at some of the assisted living facilities. But I'm always there to mentor and willing to share the knowledge that I have gained over years. And I continue to want to invest in multifamily and assisted living. That's all I want to talk about myself. Basically, well, with that, I'm going to introduce my friend Eloy. He is in Mobile Home Parks. He's from Apex. What's the full name? Apex.
Apex Communities.
Apex Communities, yes. So I know Eloy from one of my mastermind groups, and we connected very well. And he said, let me interview you on my webinar and kind of let him share the knowledge that he has gained in multifamily, not mobile home park space. He's a passionate real estate investor, and he's an author of a book, The Top Three Reasons to Invest in Mobile Home Parks. He has been in IT industry like me for 25 years. And I just figured out that he also graduated almost in the same year when I graduated. He hosts the Savvy Mobile Home Park Investor Podcast. He's currently invested in 113 apartments units and mobile home park units. While investing, he invests. I mean, the good thing about Eloy is he continued to invest into his education through top-notch courses and through personal mentorship with industry leader experts, like Brian Ellis and Adam Adams. Eloy educates people why currently doing this, I mean, during this pandemic, why mobile home parks are the best investments on the earth. That's what he thinks, and we are going to listen, hear all from him about mobile home parks. And the mobile home, according to him, mobile home parks are safer, lower tenant turnovers, and they offer higher returns and have lower taxes than stocks. So having said that, I'm not going to steal the thunder anymore. I'm going to let Eloy talk about himself. Eloy, welcome to the show. Appreciate you taking time, and I hope this would be useful for our listeners today.
Thank you, Prashant. I'm honored to be here. It's funny that you mentioned, because we started talking about how we've both been in IT for 25 years, and I've told this story multiple times of my career in IT, and it's amazing how it resonates with a whole lot of people. Because I mean, I for a lot of us, or a lot of us are either programmers or in IT security, like myself. I started out in 95. I started working, and like I told you, I thought I was gonna do IT security for 40 years, right, until I die. And then 20 years into it, and now 25 years, I'm like, I don't think I want to do this anymore, right? I'm burned out. I'm tired. I need to figure out something different, to fund my retirement. So that's, back in 99, I took some courses from a guy named Claude Diamond up here in Denver. Anyways, I'm from Denver, Colorado. If anybody is from Denver, I'd be happy to meet with you. But I took some lease option courses back then, and I did do a couple of deals with single family homes. And right around that time, I'm talking about 2000, 2001, if you guys remember, I mean, IT was just blowing up. It was crazy. And I made the decision back then that I was going to concentrate on my IT career, and my real estate ventures were going to take a back seat, right? And it's one of those things that I look back now, I'm like, oh, I should have not done that, right? I should have jumped in both feet into my real estate. So that's kind of how it went until like about 2008, right? I had most of my money invested in 401k. And as it turns out, as many of you might've gone through the same thing, I lost everything, you know, basically from one day to the next, it seemed like it was all gone, right? And it was because my 401k was mostly invested in these mortgage-backed securities, right? And that's what took down the economy back in 2008. So basically I lost everything. Fortunately, I was still young enough where I felt that I could rebuild, right? I just felt kind of sorry for, if you were in your 60s on the verge of retirement and you lose everything, I mean, that would stink, right? So I promised myself that I was going to rebuild, and it wasn't going to be around the stock market. I figured, well, why don't I take a step back and do some of the things I know have worked for me in the past, right? Why don't I take a second look at doing more of the lease options and learn some of the other techniques, owner finance, subject to's, things of that nature. I tried flipping. I tried wholesaling. I didn't like any of it because it was another job, right? Anybody who's flipped a home and done any sort of wholesaling would tell you it's not really investing. All you're doing is taking on another job. Well, I already have a job. I didn't need a second job. So for me, it was, all right, how do I develop cash flow, right? And at that time, it was, I was going to build out my portfolio of single family homes. And I thought, well, if I'm going to make, you know, $200 per door, $300 per door, well, if I want to replace my income, how many houses am I going to have to acquire to make, say, $15,000 per month in income? That's a lot of houses. I don't know if I can pick up 100 houses. I mean, maybe I could. So I started down that road. And then around that time, this is a funny story. I met my Steve Anderson, who's my partner now. I met him through salsa dancing, of all things. Him and I had become friends, and in one conversation, I said, "Hey, Steve, what do you do for a living?" He says, "Oh, I flip homes and I do new developments." I'm like, "Oh, you're in real estate?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, and so I started picking his brain and telling him what I do, and then we became pretty good friends. And then as time went on, he said, "Hey, I'm taking these multifamily courses, and I'm learning to underwrite, and I'm done with the flipping. I'm done with the new builds. I want to go bigger." And I'm like, okay. And he said, "Do you want to be my partner?" And I'm like, when he first brought it up to me, I was like, sure. I don't have hundreds and millions of dollars to go buy apartments, but okay. So the first time it was brought up, I had no idea that investing in apartments was a thing, right? It just seemed like pie in the sky type stuff. Around that time, I started attending Adam Adams events out here in Denver. And Adam was he's a syndicator, an apartment syndicator.
Yep, yep.
And he was saying the same things. It's like, if you partner up with people that have the same goals as you do, right? And then you guys, and each person concentrates on, he would describe it as wearing a hat. One person wears the acquisition hat. One person does the investor relations hat, another person does the asset management hat. Everybody wears a hat, but the whole group is working together toward one end. Then what happens is that you can scale, you can go big, and you can get to your goals a lot quicker, right? How long is it going to take you to acquire a 100 unit apartment complex? Well, if you work your butt off, there's no reason that you can't start making offers right away, right? And then you work together to raise the money for these deals and try to acquire an apartment complex. And the more I thought about that, I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Why didn't I think about this before? I mean, how come our schools never teach us about these this sort of stuff? And it's sad that really, when you start thinking about it, it's like our school system doesn't teach us about taxes. It doesn't teach us about investments. You kind of have to figure it out on your own, right? And kind of trip and fall on your own. And hopefully along the way, you meet the right people that you can partner with, and then just go bigger. So that's kind of how I stepped into it. So Steve and I started going down that road of looking for multifamily apartments. And we quickly found out that in Denver, at least, everything was so overpriced. I mean, we're talking, this is 2015, 2016. And wow. things were like, oh my God, none of these numbers just don't make sense. Everything's just so overpriced, right?
Even at that time,
this is only a couple of years back. And then, so we kind of gave up on Denver. So we started looking in Phoenix, Tucson, and we bumped into a couple of deals there, and then we would get outbid. We figured from the time we started looking to the time we actually would find something, it was going to take us about a year. We concluded that it was going to take us about a year, and it took us exactly 13 months before we found our first deal. But what happened is my partner Steve, he came back to me one day and he said, "Hey, I got something. I think I got something." And I said, "Okay, what do you got?" He's like, I got this trailer park." And my first reaction was like, "No, not a trailer park. That's ridiculous." Mm-hmm. How did we go from looking for an apartment complex to finding a trailer park? And I thought that's ridiculous. And he's like, "No, look at these numbers. This is a really good deal. And we're never going to find an apartment complex with these kind of returns." And I looked at it and like, "Oh my God, that's actually really good." So I said, give me a week. Let me bury myself in audiobooks and podcasts. And let me just learn as much as I can in a week. And then we'll see what happens. And after a week of doing that, of listening to podcasts and reading every book that I can get my hands on, not only did I come to the conclusion that mobile home parks were the right thing for us as a team, the timing was right, because everybody keeps talking about an economic downturn and recession, and who knows what the next 5 years is going to look like, but mobile home parks as it's turning out is perfectly positioned to weather any time of economic downturn. And COVID has, that this last year, as we've gone through this pandemic, has kind of proven to us that, yeah, that's, there's people who own apartment complexes who are having trouble with rental boycotts and people not paying rent. Not only are we not seeing that in mobile home parks, a lot of our friends and some of the people that we know who also own mobile home parks, they're not seeing that sort of thing. And I think the part of the reason why that is, it's quite simple. If you can't afford $500, $600 lot rent, you can't afford to live anywhere. I mean, where are you going to go, right? If you live in a $1,700, $1,900 luxury apartment, those are going to be the first to go probably, right? And when you lose your job, you're going to stop paying your rent. But if you can't afford $500, you can't afford to live anywhere. Yeah. And also the reason that we love mobile home parks, the other big reason is that oftentimes, more often than not, I should say, we aim to own the land, not the mobile homes themselves, right? So if we buy a park with park-owned homes, one of the things that we aim to do, and again, this is deal by deal, this isn't the case in every case, but for the most part, we aim to sell those homes back to the tenants. We either fix them up, we replace them with new ones, and then sell them either owner finance or for cash, right? And it depends on how much work needs to be done. But at the end of the day, in most parks, we just want to own the land and collect the lot rent. So we will fix the place up, we'll pave the roads, we'll put up new signs, and then once we take over a park, we establish new rules, right? Like you have to keep your place clean. We want everybody to paint the exterior of their homes, right? Just doing basic things like that, that's going to give the park, it's going to spruce the place up. It's going to give the park a nice clean look. But in the long term, we're hoping to drive the price of the rents up, right? And by doing that, you drive the value of the park up, right? And then whatever your exit strategy is, and whether you're going to refi or sell later. Right now, I love the model, and I'm a buy and hold guy, right? I want to keep these things for as long as we can and collect cash flow, because, you know, like I said, I'm in IT and I don't want to do IT till I'm 65. I'm ready to quit now.
Yeah. No. So I'll take a step, just jump in, Eloy, for a minute. Guys, you have heard the story from Eloy, right? I mean, he has 25 years of experience in IT, and he has worked his corporate jobs and stuff like that. And same is the case with me, you know, those who know me a little bit more. But I mean, I interview a lot of people here in my podcast, in this webinar, and I hear the same consistent story. You know, people want to, the beginning of the career, people think that, you know, buying a couple of single family homes is the way to go. And they want to enjoy the cash flow of those single family homes. But over a period of time, people start realizing that it's not worth the time that you are spending on those single family homes. You probably need like 1,000 single family homes to be able to quit your job. You know, if not 1,000, at least a couple of hundred. And to build a portfolio of a couple of hundred single family homes, one at a time, is gonna take at least 5 to 10 years. So basically, the way to go further and fastest and further is to scale yourself. And that's what, Eloy did. And that's what we are also trying to do. I mean, is basically go into an asset class where you can acquire, in one transaction, you can acquire hundreds of the units,
yeah.
You know, like 500 units. Wouldn't it be great that you just acquire one mobile home park which has 500 units at once, and you suddenly are, you know, like into 500 units? And, you know, like in multifamily, you know, we do that. I mean, and you do that all the time. So if you want to scale your business, you have to find an asset class. And today we are talking about mobile home parks. And those who don't know more about mobile home parks, I would ask a question to Eloy. Just at a basic level, you know, a lot of people don't know what mobile home parks are. I mean, when you say trailer park, and your reaction, I don't want it, right? I don't know what it is, you know? So
yeah, there's a stigma with mobile home parks, because people think they're crummy communities, there's drug dealers, there's no good things going on. And that's not true. I mean, that's not been our experience, you know, case, there's always a bad apple or two bad apples in the community, but you can say that about apartments too, right? There's one, there's a troublemaker, there's people not paying their rent, that sort of thing. I suppose that there's always going to be those sort of people that you're going to have to clean out. Our goal is to not only, I mean, along with driving up the value of the parks over a course of several years, we want to make it a safe place to live, right? So we want to find out who those troublemakers are and make sure that they leave the park. So that's part of us adding value to the community, right? So let me back up here, because so most people still call it a trailer park, but actually the proper phrase is actually a manufactured home community, right? Yeah. They were trailer parks for a long time, then they were mobile home parks, but it's actually a manufactured community. That's what they're called now.
Yeah, MHCs. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
No, but I wanted to point out something that you mentioned earlier, is that, you know, when most people understand that you build personal net worth by acquiring real estate, right? And most people who don't know about real estate, they generally consider two types of real estate investment. They know about flipping homes because they watch those TV shows of where they're flipping a home, and most people will think of rentals, right? I'll pick up a rental, and, you know, they'll pick up two houses, three houses. But the initial intention would be to, you know, have the tenants pay off the mortgage, and then 25, 30 years, you'll have two or three homes, maybe more, that you own free and clear. And that'll be part of your retirement plan, right? And then as you start to get what happens is at some point is you realize that if you do more of these types of single family homes, you might actually, if you build enough of them, you might actually be able to replace your income, right? So the question becomes, how do I build out a portfolio of 20, 30 homes, right? And there's all sorts of strategies. Like I was telling you, there's lease options and there's sub twos and all things of that nature. For me, when I started going down that road, it's like, well, it's going to take 100 of these, right? Yeah. How much time is it going to take to get 100 of these? So by going larger, you can get to your goals a lot quicker. So now it's not only a retirement plan now, there's a real possibility that you can replace your income and you can do this full time, right? It's not something that happens tomorrow, but if you plan it correctly, there's no reason. I know people who started doing this and within 2 years, they own 300 units and they quit their jobs, which is, that's amazing. That's awesome that you can do that, right?
Yeah, so the important thing is from this conversation is to get the message, you know? I mean, yes, we have a story, but to get you guys, I mean, our purpose is for you to get the message. The message is, you know, you don't have to wait 25 years to start this, right? I mean, you don't have to wait 20 years. I mean, I heard a couple of people, you know, who want to retire early. It's better we focus on these strategies earlier in our career and then start pursuing those strategies, you know, just not give up and move on to start doing different things. Have something consistent in your career so that you enjoy the benefit at a later time. You know, I mean, that's the real message, I think, you know, I mean, at least I'm getting out of this, you know.
Yeah, I would say that another thing too is that I get a lot of people who I talk to and they say, hey, how can I partner with you, right? What can we do to partner? We say, well, find me a deal, right? Find me a deal, help me find another, and then we can partner together and then we'll raise some money to knock down the deal. We decided to concentrate our efforts in the Orlando area in Central Florida. Yeah. That's where we are currently finding our deals. They're on the smaller side because, you know, yeah, we can pursue the 100 and 200 units mobile home parks, but we're also competing with the hedge funds, right? We're competing with the big money and they got cash. They go and pay cash. So it's impossible to compete. So the question for us is, okay, in what area can we compete, right? And still be able to roll up a few parks. Well, if we pick up a couple of the smaller parks, you know, the 20s and 30s and the 40 units, okay, there's less competition with those and we'll just have to do more of them, right? So if we can roll up and start building a base, a track record, right? And start showing our investors that we can make them money. Well, let's start with that, right? So that's kind of the road that we went down. We love Florida. Florida is, at least last year, it moved up to number 3 this year, but last year it was the number 1 migrated to state. Wow. I mean, it's growing. The population, South Florida, Central Florida, the real estate prices have gone through the roof. So we came in and bought a couple of parks at a really good price, and now they're worth a lot more, right? After we fixed them up and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've got an in there with a couple of brokers, and that's how we're landing our deals. So we're gonna continue growing our portfolio in Central Florida. Basically, it's the area around the Space Coast, right? Cape Canaveral up and through Orlando and up into the Daytona Beach, that area. But eventually, I love Huntsville, Alabama, right? Georgia, pretty much. Those are great states with a lot of growth. State governments are they lean toward the landlords are landlord friendly. And those are things that we look at, right? Growing population, growing job markets, that sort of thing, right? And obviously, given that the other cool thing about mobile home parks is that many of them were built 30, 40 years ago, right? And there's still a lot of opportunity where you can talk directly with the sellers, right? And the sellers are most of the time they're in their 70s, they're in their 80s, they've owned the parks for 20, 30 years. And like in our case, when we bought our first park in Cape Canaveral, the lady had not raised the rent since 1985.
Wow.
Yeah. So there were people in the park who were paying $250 lot rent.
Wow.
Right. Wow. So it was like, okay, these
a huge. So basic thing is to, you still have an opportunity in the mobile home park space where you can find mom and pop owners who have been owning these places. You have tremendous potential for tremendous upside.
Yes.
Through that, you know, once you acquire an older park, you get in, you fix it up, and then you probably sell the units back to the tenants. You know, yep. Your goal is to own the land and keep the land clean, and sell yep. the units back to the owners.
Or back to the, yeah, if ideally we'll sell it back to the person who lived there before, right? Once we fix it up. But if they don't want it, then we'll just sell it on the open market. Right. That's not always the case. We're working on a park now where we've decided to keep the units as rentals because we'll just collect more rent that way. Mm-hmm. So it's on a case by case basis. But for the most part, if you got a 50 unit park and most of those units need work, well, you don't want to do all that work, right?
Yeah.
You rather just sell them as is, sell them to somebody who will pay you 10 grand, 15 grand, let them fix them up. They can go and spend another 10,000, or it might make sense to grab two or three of them ourselves, fix them up, you know, they're put, you know, $10,000, $15,000 into them, turn around and sell them owner finance for 20, you know, and now we have a second stream of income right there. Right. So it's about being creative. You got to be creative.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because a lot of these mom and pop owners are elderly, likely they own the parks free and clear.
Yeah.
Right. Which also presents an opportunity for owner finance.
Owner
right?
finance. Yep.
So one of the things that we do is when we talk to owners, like, well, you can move yourself from the position of owner to the position of bank.
Yeah.
Right. Now we're if you take over, if you carry us on this loan, you're the bank, but we're the one taking care of the toilets and the tenants, and you're just collecting a check every month from us. And sometimes you have to educate the owners on that because they don't even know that that's an option.
They don't know the fundamental economics that by doing that they would in the long run would be saving taxes. So that's the fundamental knowledge that you guys do to those owners so that they know, okay, they still have the cash flow and they don't have to pay that much taxes. You know, they have owned it for 30 years and the park value has tripled. And, you know, otherwise they would have a big capital gain bill coming to them, you know, taxes.
And that's what they do know, right? And one of the reasons they don't sell is, one, they need it to live off of, right? They need the cash flow to survive.
Yeah.
But two, if they outright sell, they're going to have to pay that capital gains. So they don't sell. They don't have the money to fix the place up either.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or they just want to fix the place up. So if through the process of keep calling them and keep talking to them, you slowly educate them and say, well, you know, we can take over the park and we'll take care of all the maintenance and you're just the bank. Right.
Yeah.
And it sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes they don't want to listen, and you know how it is with.
It's basically building relationships with those owners.
100%.
Yes. You trust me, you know, I bought one single family apartment complex, 72 units, after talking to the seller for a year. You know, he became my friend. You know, I kept on talking to him for a year. I mean, he lives in Chicago. The property is in Indianapolis. I live in New York. I talked to him. I said, listen, I'm going to come and meet you in person. I was so excited. So I flew to Chicago just to meet him, not even looking at the property.
Yeah.
He said, why are you coming? I said, I just want to meet you. You know, you seem like a nice guy. I didn't go to meet him, but I mean, my sister lives there. So I was going there to meet my sister. Long story short, he became a friend. He said, Kumar, if I'm going to sell it, I'm going to sell it to you. And you know, after a year, he called me and he said, I'm ready to sell. Do you want to buy? I said, send me the contract. I didn't even ask the price. Send me the contract. So that building relationship in this business is the key. I mean, you build relationship with these elderly people. And guys, one thing I'm still trying to communicate once again here is, do not look at $15,000 unit, you know, owner financing $20,000 unit. Look at the scale. If you have 50 units of, you know, $20,000 each, it's $1 million park,
yeah,
right? And you, the amount of cash flow that you would do get in that $1 million park, you probably cannot get that kind of cash flow in 5-10 single family homes, you know, which will probably be more than $1 million. No.
I'll say this that a lot of people don't think about, and it's one of the things that scared me when I first talked to Steve, my partner, about mobile home parks, is that there's a lot of mobile home parks that have like septic systems, lagoons, private utilities, right? Water wells. And I was like, man, I don't, you're the water company. You're the sewer company. You're your own sewer company. I mean, who wants to do that? Right. And since he felt a lot more comfortable with that because he had done new builds, he would build, you know, he would buy these plots of lands out in Pikes Peak, which is like a national forest area. So he had no plan. He had no problem putting in a septic system in water well. So he was very comfortable with it. But at the beginning, I was like, nah, I don't. Septic systems? Are you kidding me? So that takes a little getting used to. But after a while, you come to the realization that you just have to understand those systems, right? You have to know when you buy in a park. Yes, ideally you want city water, city sewage, city everything, right? That would be ideal. But in most parks, that's not, you know, you might have city water and city power, but you have, you know, a septic system. So okay, right. So as long as you understand how those work and you're maintaining them, you bring in maintenance once a year, or you know what have you for that park. Mm-hmm. It's not that big of a deal, but it's one of the things you definitely have to kind of get used to if you've never been used to doing that yourself. Now, I was going to say Huntsville, Alabama, like I was telling you before, I've heard nothing but amazing things. It seems to be like this hidden gem, right? Very few people know about the growth of Huntsville, right? There's just so much tech. The FBI is moving in. NASA.
Yeah, FBI, NASA, you know, I skipped the whole presentation, you know, I could talk for days, you know.
No, like I was telling you, this is like the third, you're like the third person in the last 5 or 6 weeks that has brought up Huntsville, Alabama. It's like, wow, what's going on out there? It's like, nobody seems to know about this little, and it's not so little, right? It's a big enough town. It's just, no, who would have thought, right? Because everybody, at least everybody in the multifamily space, all they talk about is Dallas.
Yeah.
Dallas and Austin, Texas. That seems to be where everybody wants to be.
Right. Everybody wants to talk about Dallas and Austin and probably, you know, Denver actually is already hyped up, and Phoenix is already hyped up.
Yeah.
You know.
But looks like there's some golden opportunity right there in Huntsville. That's great.
You know, how are you managing these parks? You know, are you internalizing management, outsourcing? How are you, you know, are you outsourcing your management, or what's the method of your, you know, management?
So you know this to be true, Prashant. Finding the right property manager will make or break your deal, right? If you have the wrong person in there, they can make your life miserable. We managed to get a guy that we love the guy. He came along with he used to manage the part of the very first park that we purchased. He used to manage the park that right next to us, right? So if his park looked beautiful and the park that we bought looked old and run down. And so we went to talk to him and we said, hey, he goes, we're the new owners of that park over there. And would you be interested in managing that park for us? And he goes, what do you want to do? What do you want to do with your park? I said, we want our park to look like your park. That's the goal. it was that simple, right? So we got lucky with him. He's done an amazing job. He does a lot. He knows how to do a lot of the construction type work himself. So a lot of times he'll just handle the rehabs himself, right? And we'll pay him extra. But so when we started acquiring parks on the north end, like an hour away, we would send him to scout for us, right? So because he had so much experience as a property manager and so much experience with mobile home parks that we said if somebody sent us a deal and the numbers look good, the underwriting looked good, well, we weren't there, right? We're in Denver, right? We're not going to fly out there just to go walk a park. Well, why don't we send Bill, our property manager, out there, and he can tell us what he thinks. And he would come back and would say, yeah, you don't want this park it because of this or that or whatever reason, right? So, but if he came back and said, yeah, I think this is a good park. There's potential here. I think you can do something. That alone meant a lot for us, right? That means a lot. So when we would acquire a park, we said, would you be interested in managing this park for us? Right. So yeah, we lucked out with the property manager. But yeah,
finding the real, yes, you are right. I mean, Eloy, finding the real property management firm is the key for success.
Yeah.
And the most important thing in this business is don't think that you are paying the property manager. You know, you are partnering with property manager, right, in a way, right? I mean, you have to consider them as your partners because they work for your property, even though they get paid on a negotiated price. That if you do too much of nickel and dime on their fees, you wouldn't know what it means, you know, what can happen, because they are there on your property. They can do whatever they want, you know.
That's right.
So, I mean, I have learned it not hard way, but, you know, I started with that approach. I said, listen, even if I have to pay a little bit more for my property management, I'm going to make sure that I have the right property manager for my property.
100%.
And those property managers actually are opening up the offices just for us. You know, we started in Houston, then we went to Huntsville. They said, oh, we'll come to Huntsville with you. So you kind of build the relationship. They get paid what everybody else would get paid, but, you know, they are there with you for the long haul.
That's right.
Right. So, no, very good. So somebody's asking, you know, Seth is asking, he says, how about the financing? I mean, how do bank finance these? I mean, financing, refinancing, what are the limitations in mobile home parks?
Yeah, so that could be a challenge because when you acquire a park, you know, oftentimes they don't want to touch the mobile homes themselves, right? So they'll say something like, yeah, we'll let you borrow money for the land, but you got $100,000 worth of mobile homes or $200,000 mobile homes that they don't want to touch, right? So oftentimes what we'll do is we'll use bridge lending to acquire the park, right? We'll turn the park around, and then in two or three years down the road, we use local banks, right? The local banks know the areas. They know a lot about mobile home parks, and they're the ones that are willing to give us a long-term loan. But all that takes a backseat, because ultimately, if we can do owner finance, that's the way to go, right? At least for the first 2 years, if they're willing to carry you for say 5 years, then you do all the renovations that you need to do, and then you put some long-term debt later, right? When the park is all fixed up, and now the banks, then they'll give you money. But yeah, some banks don't want to touch mobile home parks because they don't understand them. But if you look around, there's plenty that understand the value. Yeah. Of mobile home parks, and they're willing to lend on those.
I would say thank you so much for coming. I mean, that's a great, you know, it's a cozy conversation. I hate to break it, but I want to respect everybody's time.
Thank you for having me, Prashant. That was I had a great time. Thank you.